Live from our national studios here in Accra and linking up with all our regional FM stations, we say welcome to Behind the News, our news and current affairs program, which examines issues from the perspective of newsmakers and experts. I am Kingsley Obinchere. For tonight, is Ghana sitting on a time bomb? Well, one of the peace-building organizations believes it is so if politicians refuse to check the insults in our political discourse. The 3 million Chinese loan facility for Ghana minority demands more time to study documents. And is urbanization always a problem? How should we tap from its potential as we manage the challenges? All these and many more on the package for tonight. But before then, Jennifer Adolabi is here with a summary of the day's news.
Rebels in Libya have captured Colonel Muammar Gaddafi's compound in Tripoli. Earlier, rebel fighters streamed into the capital in dozens of pickups, trucks and began firing on the compound, yelling, "God is great and Libya is free." Rebel commanders say they will concentrate all of their efforts on attacking the heavily fortified compound of Colonel Gaddafi. Meanwhile, government troops are reported to have fled the capital, leaving behind their weapons. The Narcotics Control Board has confirmed the arrest of 12 staff of the board who are linked to drug dealings and trafficking. Speaking to Radio Ghana, the chairman of the board of directors, Commander Asasi Jima, said those arrested include a top official of a local Premier League club. The celebration of this year's Homo by the people of Osu was characterized by confusion and misunderstanding. According to Radio Ghana's reporters, the people were torn between the two kings in Osu, Ni Noteowu and Ni Noi Dowuna, over who should sprinkle the kpokpoi. And the Akwetia Diamond Mines has been reactivated. The mines, known as the Great Consolidated Diamonds Ghana Limited, is expected to diversify into agriculture, construction and healthcare, among others. It will also create more than 50,000 jobs with investment prospects of more than $100 million in the next 5 years. And now back to you, Kingsley.
Thank you, Jennifer. That's Behind the News on Radio Ghana, and as usual, we encourage you to be very active listeners. You can send in your comments and text to the line 027-272-1404, and we want to move on to our first story. For nearly two decades, Ghana has been able to sustain a young democracy, and the country continues to receive commendation from the international community for maintaining that reputation. The West African Network for Peace Building, WANEP, however, says the 2012 election could spell doom for Ghana's democracy if the political insults and the polarization are not curtailed. In its West African Conflict Assessment Report on Ghana, the network said next year's election could be marred by violence. According to the Peace Building Network, the alignment of political parties to factions in chieftaincy disputes makes the situation more precarious. Emmanuel Bombande is the executive director of WANEP and is on the line with us for a detailed information on the report. You are warmly welcome to Behind the News once again.
Yeah, hello, good evening.
Are we not getting to a situation where perhaps even WANEP can be called doom mongers?
On the contrary, you have to look at this assessment report as a study that the communities have been able to highlight in terms of where their concerns are. And if anything at all, we should appreciate that we've been able to look at key indicators, elections, which are one of them, that the communities are preoccupied with. And I think it puts us rather in a better place to know where our vulnerabilities are and how do we work to ensure that we continue to sustain the peace and the stability, which is the bedrock upon which we can continue to develop as a nation in the community of nations.
Yeah. Can you please lead us into some of the key areas of this conflict assessment report?
Some of the key things that came out were issues around chieftaincy and land, and how chieftaincy in quite a number of areas where we have conflicts over chieftaincy do not just limit themselves to the traditional chieftaincy conflict, but that the chieftaincy conflict, whilst dividing communities, has political support from various political parties that even make the conflict which is traditional, to even become more, so to speak, deep-rooted and protected. The other was natural resources. Obviously, oil here came out very strongly with communities in the Western region who were part of this study. Then elections, and particularly our two main political parties, the ruling party and the main opposition party, then agro-pastoralist conflict. But in the northern region, one thing that came out from the communities was, if the northern region has to be divided, the communities were very clear that the type of broad-based consultation could lead to further dividing the region, but not according to ethnic stages, but that it should be divided in such a way that different ethnic groups will continue to find themselves in the region, in order that we do not have regions confronting one another and competing geographically on the basis of the new division of the region. These were the key areas that we focused on when the community started to respond to the study that we conducted.
You've mentioned the key areas, but how do we really tie in the elections? I know in recent times the discussion focused around political insults and all.
It's interesting you mention political insults. In the study, the communities brought out political insults as one key area that preoccupies them. And they understood political insults not just in terms of what happens in radio studios, for that matter, and in the print media, but how the insults increase the type of tensions and fear deep down in communities. They looked at elections also to be the grounds around which a system of patronage encourages the cleavages between groups, and that during elections, there is often a high level of contestation, and the 2008 elections were cited, in which the contestation is often very bitter. Then the inflammatory speeches, some of them sometimes becoming even hate speeches, coupled with antisocial behavior by party supporters, the condoning and the rewarding of violent behavior of the rank and file, of even party faithful, to the extent that people do not feel that what they are doing borders on the security of the nation, but that it is all about supporting their political party. These were some of the issues that the communities talked about that they believe we must be able to work on in order that 2012 is a peaceful election.
Yeah. When you raise these concerns, and before 2008, we had the political parties also saying, pledging their allegiance to the country in that they will ensure peace during elections. This year to just last week, we've had people also saying the same, that is, from the parties. Don't you see any action from that front helping the process?
No, it is a good development that even as recently as over the weekend, we've had our political leaders pledging themselves to do what it must take to ensure that we see an increasing level of tolerance in the use of political language and a commitment to ensure that 2012 is peaceful. We heard last week from the president himself in the Volta region committing his government to a peaceful election in 2012. What we want to add on is that whereas we should appreciate this, let this message from the political leaders descend to the level of the political supporters so that we don't see a contradictory behavior in the rank and file of the political supporters, particularly the activists. We do not see a contradictory behavior in their own conduct and behavior and use of language from what the leadership has committed itself to do. In other words, the leadership should make sure that this goes down to the community level and that they are able to engage their own party supporters to be able to behave in the way that creates the environment, that creates the climate for a good election in December 2012.
Can we go back a little, retracing our steps, and evaluate exactly how they adhered to all these codes they signed on to? Do you think they were responsible enough to it, or perhaps it was just a matter of signing and leaving it there and then creating all the fun around it and all is gone?
The code that you refer to, the capacity for that code to be adhered to, respected, and implemented fully is one in which the voluntary submission of the political parties to that code and how they respect that code now makes it possible for its implementation. Up to now, nobody can force the political parties even to implement the code, the very code that they themselves have signed. To that extent, therefore, one step is that in committing themselves to the good, to the code, it is a good sign. But the second is to now go beyond the signature and the commitment and begin to act in such a way that that code and the provisions of it are respected, not because somebody is forcing the political parties to do so, but they voluntarily have committed themselves to it and derive a satisfaction that they are playing a leading role for this type of peace that we are talking about.
Yeah. Dr. Amanda Bombane, we'll please hold you for a while because we have a representative of one of the political parties you are talking about, the ruling National Democratic Congress. Yabuatinjan is the national organizer of the party. You are welcome, sir, to the program. Hello, Mr. Yabuatinjan.
Thank you, my brother.
Yes. We've heard Dr. Emmanuel Bombane on the issues and the potential that we can go right to the edge of the precipice if we don't act very well. To what extent has the NDC managed to rein in the activists so that in whatever they do, they'll be mindful of all that we are talking about?
Well, my brother, I was on my way going to the Eastern region to have a political program with our activists. So I did not hear him well until my brother called me and said that I should listen to Mr. Bombane. But I have been following keenly the issue that have been people have been discussing, you know, and I'm saying that as NDC or as a party, we have always been saying that once we are in power, we have the responsibility to ensure that we have very peaceful elections come 2012. And that is exactly what we are going to do. In fact, the president said this thing in somewhere in the Volta region where he attended a religious program. I was then out of this country, and some people, you know, were saying a whole lot of things about him because he has said that he is prepared to hand over, you know, in 2017 peacefully, and that he was arrogant and he just described him in all sort of manner. But I think he did not mean any harm. He was just trying to say that prophetically, that is where he thinks that judging from the level of development that he's bringing to Ghanaians and what he has been able to do so far, that is where he thinks that he is going to hand over and make sure that that elections, you know, are conducted in a very peaceful manner. But I think as the national organizer of the party, I do agree with Mr. Bombane because of certain the development that has erupted with the politics of insult and some other things that are coming up. I think we need to be very careful and make sure that 2012, we do not plunge this country into chaos.
Yes, there was one key point that came out of the assessment report, and it related to sometimes it may not be officially, but some parties may be gliding towards chieftaincy disputes and supporting factions. How do you think it can be helped so that you keep away completely from it and let the rank and file also keep away without creating problems?
Well, I have not. I wasn't a member of the team that was at that meeting organized by IEA. But I just want to assure Ghanaians that the NDC have always been living to expectation when it comes to making sure that we do not bring in traditional rulers in our political dispensation. We have always been saying that when you go to any area, your responsibility is to go and pay homage or maybe tell the custodians of the land that I've come to do politics in your land and I just have to come and beg or greet you and announce my presence in that area. Then you have the right, you know, to go out there. We do not in any way, you know, try to coerce them or involve them in our political campaigning. And I think we have always been telling people, and that is exactly what we want to do. And we are just saying that once we are in power, and I have initially said this thing, that we'll do everything possible to ensure that come 2012, we have very peaceful elections. And people should not lose sight of the fact that NDC was in power, and if we talk of NDC, we have to, you know, trace our existence from the time that Jerry Rawlings was the leader of the party, from a revolutionary leadership to a democratic leadership. And we handed over peacefully to Kufuor when we lost power. And that is exactly what we are going to do. What Professor Mon said is just a prophetic. If it comes that the Ghanaians do not see anything good in NDC and they decided to change government in 2013, why not? He will hand over peacefully, because the man at everybody sees him. He's a very peaceful person, so nobody should fear. And I, just as I've said, I agree with my brother again, and I just want to call brothers from the other side of the political divide and tell them that they should not just fear, and we are prepared to hand over if Ghanaians really see that we haven't done well and they want to change them. Yeah. Why not?
Mr. Abwatinjan, before we let you go, sometimes, you know, at the leadership, the communication is so good on these issues during discussions. Are you prepared to let organizations like IPAC be formed at the district and regional level so that they see exactly what you are talking about at the national front too?
If we talk of IPAC, it involves all political parties and the electoral commission. As I speak to you now, I told you that I'm only going to the Eastern region to, you know, have a meeting with the leadership of the party in that particular region. We have gone throughout the whole country, you know, educating our people and telling them that they should exercise the maximum restraint. And we have been telling them that this politics of insult should not come from us. We have embarked on that outreach, and we have educated our people. We are just thinking that we are hoping that our brothers will also do the same. And that is exactly what we are doing. And just as you are saying that, yes, we always, as we talk to people, will also descend to the lowest level of our structure and inform our people and tell them that they should try as much as possible to conduct themselves and make sure that come 2012, Ghana doesn't plunge ourselves into the system that we had in Cote d'Ivoire. God forbid. But I just want to assure you that we are doing our best, and I think God himself will grant us the wisdom and the ability to educate our people, you know, to behave safe.
I want to thank you very much, Mr. Abwatinjan, for joining us on the program tonight.
Thank you, my brother.
That is the national organizer of the National Democratic Congress, the ruling party. But we still have Dr. Emmanuel Bombandi on the line. You listen to these ones, and sometimes you are encouraged that there is going to be something good. But there are times that immediately thereafter, you hear other representatives from various parties engaging in different disputes altogether. What do you see to ensure that some of these statements will permeate through the system?
Thank you so much. First of all, it is very reassuring to hear somebody like the national organizer of the NDC speak the way he has spoken. Not only has he spoken about what his party is committed to do, but he's inviting his counterparts and his colleagues so that everybody does his or her part in order that we create that type of environment in which the elections in 2012 will just pass off like any ordinary event. But having made observation, yes, indeed, that sometimes you hear the opposite precisely because others come onto the platform in public and then they say the contrary. What we need to continue to do is that we need to monitor the type of speeches and the type of language, the insulting language that denigrates and that creates anxiety and tension. And once we are able to see the pattern and the specific incidences of these uses of language, we draw the attention directly of the politicians who spoke in that manner and continue to appeal to their good conscience, continue to appeal that 24 million Ghanaians do not want them to plunge Ghana into the type of political chaos we have seen in the West Africa sub-region. And that is the way we can hold them accountable, whilst giving them their respect and also thanking them for offering themselves to be people for public service. I think if we are able to do this way with mutual respect, we will see a fantastic deepening of Ghana's democracy, and we will continue to be an example in Africa of peace and stability.
We'll once again come to you to hold on for a while as we go to a representative of the New Patriotic Party, Anthony Kabo, the National Youth Organizer. He's also on the line with us. Tony, you are welcome to Behind the News.
Hi, Kingsley. Hope you're doing well.
I hope you are doing well too. I'm fine. But we are raising the concerns, and you've listened to Dr. Bombande and your colleague on the other side, Yab Watin Jan. How is the MPP also taking up the concerns and sending it down to the people?
Well, I must admit that I was not following the discussions that have gone on between Mr. Bombati, my big brother, and also Mr. Yagjan from the other side. But I would be grateful if you can lead me into the discussion in a way that will assist me to be able to make a firm commitment of the MPP's own position on the matters that have been raised.
Yeah, we are listening. How you can really help.
Can help me to lead me into the discussion, because I didn't quite hear.
Yeah, we are looking at the reports, as mentioned by the West African Network for Peace Building, that if we do not do our things well, especially with political insults, sometimes alliance with chieftaincy disputes and factions and all, perhaps we are on the decline and we don't want to go to the edge of a precipice. So what exactly can the political parties do, and we want what MPP is doing in that instance?
Well, thank you very much. I think that the OneUp and the paper that they have released is very, very, very timely. I guess that this should have always been the issues that political parties should engage in, especially in our discussions, to ensure that we have a free, peaceful, transparent election and also help deepen the democracy of our country. We are in the MPP are always the firm believers and committed ourselves to the democratic process, and I'm sure that everybody in this country knows that if you are looking for a party that has upheld the rule of the democracy and of course also abided by the tenets of democracy, we stand tall amongst all the political parties in the country as far as the democratic dispensation is concerned and our commitment and contribution in that respect. But if you come to think about elections generally and the matters that normally provoke politicians to make or issue invectives on their opponents largely have been because people have misunderstood politics in our part of the country to mean that it is more about who can shout more, who can insult better, and who can denigrate the opponent at the expense or for their own political gain. And you would recall that our politics has been characterized with a lot of insults and invectives and people showing utter disrespect for leadership and, of course, for the various leaders of the political movements. And I'm very happy that these issues are being thrashed out and being discussed. But also, we must not also just look at the commitment of political parties just by word of mouth, but also the action that they are taking in respect of dealing with these matters in a way that the public will be reassured or reassured about the commitment of the political parties. Our politics, you know, in the last couple of months have been shrouded with a lot of invectives and insults, and you've had all manner of people and manner of institutions come out to speak against politics of insults. The president himself has an occasion to have called on the country to look critically about the spate of insults in our politics. The question you ask yourself is, if you want to take those statements that the president has made, or political leaders and religious bodies and other think tanks have called for, what have been the actions that have been taken by or commitments that we can point to say that yes, indeed, political parties are reforming and are listening to the calls of people, and therefore the people of this country would rather want to engage, or political parties should engage the people of this country to specific issues that are affecting the lives of many, many, many millions of people. I think that we in the MPP have shown great commitment to this process. We are very, very particular, and you will recall that even in the 2008 general elections, our flag bearer, Nanado Dankwa Akufo-Addo, had occasion to call on his colleagues on the other side to ensure that we have a free, peaceful, transparent elections where we can focus on the issues rather than the personal attacks and the mudslinging and the, you know, character assassination that have been orchestrated for political gains. All these matters are issues that politicians must look at. But it still comes down to the point, Kingsley, that you need to see benchmarks. You need to see the commitments. And like Mr. Bombande was saying in his submission, he was talking about the fact that conscience must be appealed to. But beyond conscience, let us make sure that we are able to educate the electorate to be aware of the fact that political parties that engage in insults and lies and propaganda and all that have to be rejected by the people, because they are not necessarily addressing the concerns that people are, you know, are bedeviled with, or the difficulties that people are undergoing, which of course is supposed to be the bane of our politics, where we are supposed to engage and address issues to ensure that we have national cohesion and also to have the peace and tranquility that will give this country stability.
So you believe that the moment we start introducing all the issues and talking directly about them, the problem will be solved?
Yes, in many ways. I think that if we are able to, and of course, it's not just only the politicians, because sometimes the media also has a role to play. The sensationalism that is associated with some of these things, and the fact that the media houses will hype what will make the news or what will give them the adrenaline rush for people to listen to their networks, have also contributed, you know, largely in part to these difficulties that we are having.
Okay. We want to thank you very much, Tony Kabu, and we hope to be having such discourses so that at least we'll be pushing that message down. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Anthony Kabu is the National Youth Organizer of NPP. But ending with you, Dr. Bombande, we've listened to, sometimes people would like to call them the two main contenders. In this case, can we say that there is hope?
Absolutely, there is hope. And if you listen also to the National Youth Organizer, Mr. Kabu, his words are reassuring. You listen to the National Organizer of the NDC, his words are reassuring. There is no question in my mind that in the contestation, there are bound to be tensions. What we need to do is to recognize that those tensions can be managed within the level of tolerance that we have for one another, our cultural attributes, that we are the same people, and we should never allow the tensions to boil beyond manageable levels. Because at the end of the day, the parties are just the vehicle to be able to form a government, and for that government to take us into the future. And the more we think about it that way, the competition should not lead us into a bloodbath, but it should rather be able to bring us to enjoy it and to celebrate all the political leaders for offering themselves to be leaders. And in that way, we continue to be a good example. So let me quickly add that as part of this competition, when we make a mistake, I think we should have the courage as women and as men to say that we are sorry. I offended you in the way I spoke. I am sorry. Let's move on. In Ghana, we don't say I'm sorry enough. We don't say it often. But we're human beings, and we're bound to make mistakes. When we make mistakes, let's say we are sorry, and we move on to the next.
Okay. I want to thank you very much, Dr. Emmanuel Bombande, for joining us on the show tonight.
Thank you so much.
That is the executive director of ONEP. But we are talking about education, getting to lower ranks. And the NCCE, National Commission for Civic Education, is the constitutional body mandated to educate and inform Ghanaians on their rights, duties, and responsibilities. Mrs. Augustina Akosua-Kumenyi is a vice chairman of the commission. She's joined us on the line. Madam, you are welcome.
Thank you, Kingsley. How are you?
Fine, thank you. And I hope you are doing well. But we are posing that question. Will you say that the NCCE has been very proactive in pushing the agenda of peace and managing this democracy with the way people respond to issues?
Of course. I mean, I can assure you that probably without the NCCE, we wouldn't have been enjoying the peace that we are doing. The little that we can do with the resources available, we have been resolving conflicts in flat areas. And recently, this weekend, we were with all the political parties leaders at the Little Lake Hotel. 3 days, we confined ourselves there to draw up a code of conduct, which they are all signed. There were a lot of, discussions to and fro, and I was telling when they were drafting the constitution. And we managed to come to a consensus, and all the political parties have agreed that we are going to behave. But then we have also put into this code of conduct an enforcement and implementation, that there should be a body formed with Peace Council and the ONEP and all of them involved. And it's going to be established, a body will be established in each constituency, because we want to start at the lowest level and make sure that if there's any small conflict, it's nipped in the bud before it escalate into something big.
So Madam, hopefully, yes,
we should be able to be resourced to do this through the IEA, or probably we will go to finance and ask for money to do this sort of thing.
Yeah.
Because the peace in this country should never be taken for granted.
Yeah. So sometimes people accuse the NCC that it is not visible enough. Do you share their sentiments?
Well, I mean, it would be difficult for me to say that I'm not visible, because I know that we go to many places, but I have noticed that when we go to do Durban workshop or drama or whatever we do, normally the maximum you will get attending is about 200 people. So there might be people in the community. Sometimes we have a district with about 120 communities. And because of lack of resources, we will pick about two communities to do these things. So the audience we will get will be about 500. And we are hoping that this 500 will spread it all over the place. Apart from the media who help us with publicizing whatever we do, people will keep saying that. But I can assure you that with the little we have, we do our best.
So
and we are not known in the cities, but in the villages and the rural areas, everybody is aware of the NCC and the work we are doing there.
So you believe that perhaps as 2012 approaches, you'll be putting in much more, but you need finances, as you mentioned.
Oh, definitely. I mean, if we have about 120 communities, I think it's awful that we do only two communities. We should be able to do 50 communities out of the 120, so that every Ghanaian will benefit from the education. But the good thing that I have noticed in this country is that 80% of the people who are all in the rural area want peace and are therefore very calm. It is only a few politicians in the cities and in the capital who are always on the radio stations and everywhere giving the impression that that is how the whole country is. I tell you, the amount of vituperations we hear in the radio stations, if it was like that all over the country, there wouldn't be any peace for us to enjoy at all. But I can assure you that Ghanaians are very peaceful, loving people. And with the education we are going to do, and this board, everything will be okay.
Mrs. Augustine Akosua-Kuma, you want to thank you very much for your time on Behind the News.
Thank you very much.
That is the Vice Chairman of the National Commission for Civic Education. Behind the News, linking up with you on all our regional FM stations. You are on Radio BUR Live and on Sunrise FM Kuforidia. Some of your tales before we take a break. We all agree that there should be decent politics come 2012, but that does not mean questionable characters should be spared. Umar is sending that one from Yendi. We need solutions to the gas shortage in the country. Let's move Madagana to the right direction. God save us all. Long live. Okay. Long live us all. Aziz Donla. What? Politicians should also stop politicizing chieftaincy affairs. Umar sent that one again. And the rest of African leaders should learn from what is happening in Libya. Dan from Nkwanta. I suggest the government pass a bill against people who indulge in political insults, else the menace can never be curbed. Edem Sumneakesi Kwau. And 2012 elections will be peaceful, and Prof will humbly and peacefully hand over to Nana. Gabriel from Kwando sent that one. And from Raman Samari Tamale, we are in an era where if you don't insult, you would not be rewarded. That is what Raman thinks. Victor from Bamboy says, we are prone to violence and conflicts so far as feelings are strained and ribs get fermented. Interesting. Mensa Amada, Ghanaians are begging the MPP to be calm and humble when Nana Addo is being retired in 2012. And from Inti Sanku, WAEC should release their withheld results before they start the NOVDEC exams. They are turning WAEC into a profit-making institution. I think they've released the results already, so please check. Ghana needs a personality like Bombandi to advocate the need for peace in the country. From Derek Charles, Panyania Upper West, and Andrew Manga, Boku says politicians should desist from insulting one another. Behind the News on Radio Ghana, we are live on Ubuntu 96.5 FM, and we move on to the next story. The much-expected approval of a $3 billion Chinese loan facility by Parliament for now remains on hold. As it stands now, the minority group in the House wants adequate time to scrutinize the nuances of the facility, saying the accompanying document is too voluminous to allow for a proper judgment on the loan as it stands now. For political think tanks like the Dankwa Institute, the withdrawal of the facility from Parliament would serve Ghanaians better because the deal is boxed under one agreement without details of specific projects involved. We'll be taking the concerns of the Executive Director of the Institute. But first, we'd like to speak to the Chairman of the Finance Committee in Parliament, James Abeji, who is now on the line with us. You are welcome, sir.
Thank you very much, and good evening to your listener.
Yes. The thought was that the House was going to approve the $3 billion loan facility from China today. What happened? Why was it torpedoed?
No, it is not perfectly right that the House was going to approve it today. One of the items on the recall agenda is the approval of the $3 billion facility from China, from the China Development Bank. We call shortly CDB. So the committee had been meeting since the agreement was laid in Parliament or referred to the Joint Committee on Finance and Poverty Reduction. We have had more than 5 days meeting. We have interviewed or take briefing from more than six ministers. Last week, from Tuesday to Friday, we went to Kufuor Edua Capital View Hotel, where we had a vigorous scrutiny of the facility. Now, because the projects involved are voluminous, there were detailed feasibility study of all the projects. Now, if you print this document, it will be difficult for one to read in a short time. So enough time was allowed for members to go through. And in fact, pen drive was provided to members of the committee on which the feasibility study and all other estimates were made on this pen drive. So members were given adequate information on this. Now, I have been putting the report together. Fortunately, this evening, we have finalized the report. The report has been signed. Tomorrow, we will be laying the report on the floor of the House, and it will be distributed to members. Members will then be given the time to read through this report, and probably Thursday, the report will be taken to the motion level, where debate will ensue on this, and probably by Friday, Parliament will be approving this facility.
Yeah, Mr. Abeji, the concerns we've heard all around as we talk to some people is that our oil is being mortgaged for the $3 billion loan. Is that the real situation?
Yeah, thank you very much for the opportunity. I think I need to explain this thing very clearly to Ghanaians. Mortgage is, in its sense, it's not a bad thing. If you remember when we're doing the STS, this issue cropped up. Ghana has found oil, and we are producing oil. Ghana will be lifting its share of the oil. And Ghana currently has lifted two already, and will be lifting, I think, another two before the end of the year. Now, this lifting by Ghana is sold in the world market. Now, mortgaging means that if Ghana wants to make any meaningful development out of the oil revenue, shall we, as a country, start accumulating this money in bits? In a year, we accumulate a certain amount of money. And if you take us 10 years before we can get enough money to do a development project, is that the option for us to take? Or there is a bank that is ready to provide us with money to do the development project now and then use the money from the oil to pay in bits until we finish paying. This is another option. And the second option is the best option all over the world. It is not only Ghana that is doing it. All of our countries that have oil have, in a way, collateralized their money or mortgage their oil revenue, take the money to develop and pay back later. That is the option that we are taking at the moment. So we are getting ready market for the oil. Now, one of the provisions of this agreement is that China Development Bank is providing Ghana with $3 billion facility. This $3 billion is divided into two tranches, tranche A and tranche B, which is $1.5 million each. Now, the terms of this are that tranche A has a 5 years grace period, a repayment period of 10 years, an interest rate of 6 month LIBOR plus 2.9%, interest rate. Tranche B has a grace period of 5 years, a repayment period of 5 years, and an interest rate of 6 month LIBOR plus 2.85%. So these are the conditions under which we are taking the loan facility. Mm-hmm. Now, tenant wants to say that as we give you this facility, we want to be sure that you'll be paying for this. And therefore, where do you, will you get the money to pay? We say we have oil. We will sell the oil and then use the money to repay the loan. Then it's okay. We also need some of the oil. So can you sell some of these parts to us? We say, yeah, we can sell it to you, but we have to enter into an off-taker agreement, which will be entering into between government of Ghana through the GNPC and China. Now, whatever revenue will be coming from this off-taker agreement will be paid into the petroleum holding fund, which Parliament has passed in the petroleum revenue management law. That money will come to the petroleum holding fund. Bank of Ghana will disburse this money. Portion will go to the stabilization fund, portion will go to the heritage fund, and a portion will go to the annual budget funding amount, which is the consolidated fund. Now, the one that is going to the consolidated fund, the petroleum revenue management law has given government the mandate to use part of that money to pay for any loan at all. So we are saying that that portion, a part of it will be put into an account that we call escrow account, which will be established by Bank of Ghana. Then that money from that account will be used to pay for the loan. And China Development Bank was happy with that arrangement.
Yeah. Mr. Abeni, yes, you've explained this, but quickly, please hold on. I'll come back to you. We have on the line the executive director of the Dankwa Institute. They have called for a withdrawal so that Parliament can have time to study it and all. Mr. Gabi Ocheridakwu, you are welcome to Behind the News.
Hello, sir. Hello, sir. Yes. My regards to the Honorable MP as well.
You've listened to the explanation of Mr. Abeni. Do you still want the facility withdrawn from Parliament?
I really still don't understand why the facility is before Parliament. I'll tell you why I don't understand. Now, first of all, let me just correct, I think something that the MP said. He said that a grace period is 5 years. I don't think it doesn't say 5 years on the document that they presented before Parliament. It says up to 5 years. And I think what that means is that the Chinese would look at every project or each project specific and look at the feasibility or bankability of that project and then determine which grace period to give. So first of all, the grace period is not up to 5 years because, you know, and that is what makes this whole project pretty strange. Because what it is that it appears we have been given a credit line about $3 billion, and we are asking Parliament to approve that credit line. And what does that mean? If you approve this credit line, what does that mean? Does that, and it doesn't necessarily mean that as soon as you approve of it, the Chinese will give you the money. No. The Chinese will sit down with government, go through each project, look at its feasibility study, feasibility aspect, and then decide whether or not the Chinese want to fund a particular project. So my question is, if that is the case, why present this omnibus facility before the House, particularly when subsequently we've been told that each item would be presented back to Parliament individually for Parliament to approve of it or otherwise. So I asked the question, what is the purpose of bringing this so-called head agreement to Parliament? I don't know. Secondly, this is purely a commercial loan. There's absolutely no two ways about it. It's a commercial loan. It's not as if the Chinese are giving us any concession. The only concession, if you like, we are getting from the Chinese is that they are prepared to give us money. And there's nothing to suggest that we can't get that money from anywhere else. And let's not also create the impression that within the next 4 years, this $3 billion, we have enough projects coming out of this $3 billion facility to cover all the $3 billion. I really don't think that's possible.
So you believe Ghana can get another facility, elsewhere?
Let me finish. The impression is being created as if even within the lifetime of this government, which is really just 2 years, it will be able to exhaust this. Because even per the document itself, they say that up to 6 years. Okay? Now, my question is this. You are going to the Chinese for commercial loan, which if you go to the international capital market, you will get the same rate. Okay? Secondly, when you, to get to access this facility, the Chinese have made sure that you have to sell your oil to them directly. And whether it goes through the petroleum fund, it goes through the money that goes through the budget in terms of the budget funding, the oil money that goes through there, or it goes through wherever, it will still end in an escrow account, specifically created for the purpose of making sure that even the oil that you sell to the Chinese, after going through all these processes, will end up in the escrow account, and then they usually pay back the money that...
So, with all that you are telling us, you believe the facility should still be withdrawn?
I haven't gotten to the critical point.
Yeah, you know, we are working with the time, you know?
Yeah, but I heard the minister spoke. If you want me to...
Yeah.
If you want me to respond, give me time to respond, or else don't call me. Okay, so let me talk. So, if that is the case, you are getting a commercial loan from China. They are not giving you any concessions. You are giving them your oil, okay? And thirdly, we know that when the Chinese strike a deal with you, they are coming with Chinese contractors. And sometimes they go as far as coming with Chinese labor. If you go to the international market, there's no demand for access to your oil, to buy your oil. There's no demand. They won't say to you that they want contractors from London and the rest of it. So if we are not careful, what seems to be a good deal from China, all the profits from these deals, we end up back in China. There's a 100 million irrigation project. And interesting enough, it is built, operate, and transfer. When you see built, operate, and transfer, usually what it means is that a company that will operate the BOT will end up funding it. We are funding it, and it will be built, operate, transfer by a Chinese company. So at the end of the day, by... any way you look at it, this deal inures more in the interest of China than us. And really, I think that Parliament in Russian lumping together this 3 billion to put before the House, I really don't see the point. If in government has intended all along to bring back to Parliament item by item, well, item by item, when they are ready, because you bring a loan facility of 12 items, and one of them you say that Eastern Corridor may cost you anything between 150 to 500 million.
Yeah. I guess the point is well pushed for now, Gabby.
150 and 500 million. I'm done.
Yes. Thank you very much. But coming back to you, Mr. Aveji, you've heard a concern on the other line from Gabby Asario Chiridako from the Dankwa Institute. Yes. Are you taking that into consideration?
I think the concerns of the Gabby has conveniently been addressed by the committee's report. But I urge him to come to Parliament tomorrow and get a copy of the committee's report and read it and know that those concerns have been addressed. I am surprised that Gabby seems to have everything wrong about this facility. He has every aspect of the facility wrong. And it's the same way that other members of the minority are also talking about this. There are basic things here that we are talking about. We have 3 billion facility that is going to be approved by the board of CDB at a sitting. What Gabby is talking about is that if these 12 projects that are under the 3 billion facility, if we should be bringing this one by one to the board of CDB, it means that the board of CDB has to sit down 12 times to approve this. And there is uncertainty that some of the projects might not be approved by the board. Now, by approving the 3 billion facility for Ghana, it is for us in our report recommending that since we do not know the details of the subsidiary agreement or the specific individual project, government must come back to Parliament for Parliament to know the details of those agreements and approve them. And we had agreed that on that one in a report. So we don't want a situation where there will be undue delay, unnecessary delay, which with uncertainty in approval of any of the 12 projects. But by putting this 3 billion before the board, would have killed so many birds with one stone.
Yeah, okay.
That is number one. That is very important. And one critical thing is that the individual projects or subsidiary agreement would come to Parliament for Parliament to approve.
Okay. Mr. Abeji, the thing is still being discussed. We are not saying that we are ending it here, but for now, we have to end this particular discussion. We want to thank you very much for your time on the show tonight.
You're welcome.
Mr. James Abeji is in charge of the Finance Committee, Chairman of the Finance Committee in Parliament. Behind the news on Radio Ghana, we want to move on to our last story here. As the world counts its steps towards the symbolic 7 billion baby on 31st October this year, development experts and planners are examining how the challenge of a growing population can be managed. For some time, the challenge has been with increasing urbanization. Very often, its negative side is projected and very little is said about the potential that it holds. How positive can urbanization be and how can its potential be harnessed? Dr. Stephen Kwanchi is the Executive Director of the National Population Council and is joining us on the line to look at a few of these issues. Dr. Kwanchi, you are welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you. How are you?
Fine, thank you. We just want to know, is there any advantage with urbanization that is increasing at this present pace?
Well, thank you very much. Urbanization all over the world has been a good. It shows that the economy is opening, education is increasing, there is enlightenment, and people are opening to their life because it's also a gateway to information flow and access to technology. Sadly, when we come to this part of the world, it doesn't necessarily go that way. Yes, so urbanization is good in the sense that it is not just the population that is increasing. Once population increases at a place and people move in there, what it means is that it draws attention to some of the challenges that face the people who are congregating in those areas. So definitely, policy direction comes for certain policies to be put in place to open up the environment. And then some of the challenges that we often talk about that go with urbanization are addressed. And one of them is fundamentally education, you see. One issue that I also need to talk about is that maybe we are not seeing the benefits of urbanization because the way we find an urban area in Ghana is in itself also, from my point of view, a little bit defective because we are only talking about any settlement, the population of 5,000 plus. And some of the areas that have population of 5,000, there's nothing urban about them except their population. You see, they don't have the infrastructure, they don't have the schools, they don't have the hospitals, and yet their population has hit 1,000 and therefore they become urban. I think urbanization should be seen beyond just mere numbers. And once that is seen, then you can begin to see the infrastructure, the health facilities that go with it, the enlightenment technologically and all that. I mean, and networking comes in. The entrepreneurship also will increase because people are able to network. That is where the environment I said earlier on is open.
Mm-hmm.
People are able to access information and therefore learn from best practices elsewhere.
Yeah.
So it is not just population numbers that grow to become urban, but it must be accompanied by all these developments that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
In that case, it becomes positive.
Okay.
And elsewhere, urbanization drives down poverty as the economy urbanizes or the population grows to attain the status of an urban nation. What happens is that, I mean, there are jobs that are created, and then once jobs are created and people are able to find jobs to do, people are able to earn more, and poverty goes down. Unfortunately, at this part of the world, that is not exactly what is happening. And that perhaps is due to the fact that we have not seen urbanization as a way out of poverty. And we have also not perhaps put in place the needed policies to look at how urbanization is growing.
Yeah.
At the same time, because of the definition we have also given to an urban settlement, it is too simplistic. Even though that is very easy to conceptualize, for me, it is too simplistic.
Yeah. Dr. Kwanchi, we'll get to the simplistic definition in another discussion, but for now, we want just to ask, the world is planning towards 7 billion people. Are we ready in urban areas to receive an additional influx?
Of people.
Yes.
Well, you shouldn't necessarily be ready or not ready. As for people, once they decide that this is where there are opportunities that they can use to maybe make a little more money or live better lives, I mean, you don't necessarily have to be ready. It will come.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not too sure whether the world is ready to receive more people. I mean, the question is whether it is rational to add on more people if we are not actually prepared to take care of them. And I would say that if that is the case, we are not too much prepared, because the more people that we have blocking the urban areas, the more challenges that we may face.
Yes, and that is where I want to hold you, because I'm talking about the 7 billion challenge. We'll be running a few series on it, but for now, I want to thank you very much for joining us on the program today. Dr. Stephen Kwanchi, Executive Director of the National Population Council. But we just want to pick a quick one from Mr. Emba, who is a waste management expert. Mr. Emba, make it snappy for us. Talking about the increasing population and our management of waste, do you see us doing well with an influx?
Well, thank you very much. Once population increased, environmental pressures also increased with population. And people would continue, if I listen to Dr. Kwanchi very well. One, people, we're not just talking about numbers, we're also talking about consumption patterns. And so waste categorization, the characteristics of waste would also change with urbanization. And with population increases, waste quantities would also rise. And therefore, we'll need to change our waste management practices. We need to put new innovations. We need to create better waste management arrangements. And not just collect and throw away, but also create benefits that will derive from waste. In any case, if we call what we call waste, if we take a very clear definition of what waste is, it's any material that the original owner no longer requires.
Okay.
By this definition, it implies that what you consider as waste may be considered by another person or institution as a raw material.
And that is where we'll hold you, because we'll be expanding very much on this particular issue, God willing, tomorrow. Edward Emba is a waste management expert. Thank you so much for your time and providing us with that teaser as we go into the urbanization issues and the world of 7 billion. Thanks so much. Behind the news, we just want to go back before then some of your tests. Insulting is not the character of Ghanaians, so we should reject all political parties that engage in insults. Emmanuel Phobia, and insulting politics will never bring development to any country. Let's tie the broom and sweep the room. Sunk Seydou Yendi, and Ghanaians trust our leader Prof. Mills as a peaceful politician, from Imakin Tampo, Sherman Kuma. And Bob Blaze, Samadu Wawest, says all political parties should lead Ghanaians to listen to good messages from God on the airways, especially this sacred month of Ramadan. And it is one thing arresting drug dealers and another thing dealing with them. From Noom Dakwa, Ashanti Mampon. And Ghanaians are going to vote NDC back into power based on the good work that Prof is doing. Awini Peter Aguna Bedumasin. When every right-thinking Ghanaian should pray that the 2012 general election be free from violence. AU Farouk. And gone were the days when leaders were persuaded to rule, but nowadays they want to rule by all means. It is God that appoints his own leaders to rule over his people. Jeremiah from Jarapa. And Zion Boga Gaddafi is no different from George Bush. And that is where we wrap it all up for today. Me and Isoa was at the controls. On behalf of Christopher Esiedu, Bright Gamma, and Edmund Peter, my name is Kinsley of Interest.